it all away. Those ties you went and suffered for, you called disaster. Thunder, 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 thunder. Why take everything you see? You'll have nothing left to squander if you keep pushing me away. You'll have no one left to love. You're less than you should be. Why run so hard to finish shy? You cast a diamond and wonder, 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 wonder. Why take everything you see? You have nothing left to squander if you keep pushing me away. You have no one left to
Hi, my name is Lika and it's my podcast, Don't Take It For Granted. We live surrounded by things that once were dreams, sacrifices, or even miracles. Peace, freedom, love, and yet somehow we get used to them. We start to believe they are permanent, guaranteed, always by default. But they are not. Don't take it for granted, because the moment you do, you've already started losing it. I want this radio show to be not just a conversation, but a reminder about values, about reality, about the things you only understand when they are already gone. Don't take it for granted.
So if we imagine a direct conflict between Russia and the EU, the EU will lose.
Today we're talking about security, something we have often taken for granted. About freedom and peace, which right now are being fought for in a brutal war in Ukraine, in the war between Russia and Ukraine. About peace, which Europe risks losing. The topic of today's radio show is existential war. My guest today is someone whose voice helps us better understand what is truly at stake. We met at a conference in Berlin. This conference was focused on a common security policy for Ukraine and Europe. It's a pleasure for me to introduce Dr. Volodymyr Yarmolenko. He is a Ukrainian philosopher, writer, a doctor in political studies, a lecturer at the Kyiv-Mohyla Academy in Ukraine, and a president of PEN Ukraine. His work explores war, identity, and the values shaping modern Europe. And in recent years, he has become one of the key voices explaining Ukraine to the world. Volodymyr was a keynote speaker at the conference at the Centrum Liberale Moderne in Berlin. And while many other speakers, including German politicians, refer to this war as the war in Ukraine, Volodymyr described it differently, as an existential war. He said that this war is not Ukrainian. It's existential war for Europe. Yes, it's existential not only for Ukraine, as many Europeans still believe, but for Europe itself. Stay with us, and after music pause, we talk with Volodymyr and figure out why Europe can no longer afford to take its security for granted. And now, New Order, Blue Monday. We'll be right back. So I remind you, we are on the Radio Corax in podcast. Don't take it for granted. I'm Lika Toloraya, and we talk about the war in Europe, which our guest Volodymyr Yermolenko calls existential war. So, Volodymyr, what do you mean exactly? Why you call the war between like Ukraine and Russia existential? What is it about for you? What do you mean exactly?
So by existential war, I mean that this is a war with a Hamletian question, to be or not to be. And for Ukraine, it's obvious. We are fighting for our existence. We understand that Russia wants to destroy the whole of Ukraine. Why? Because if Ukraine exists, that poses a lot of questions about Russian own history, about Russian identity. Because Russia has built its identity upon the existence of Kyiv, for example. Otherwise, Russian history would start not from the 9th or 10th century as they wanted to start it, but from the 15th or 16th century, so half a millennium later. And they want to get this Ukrainian part of their history because it is giving them depth. And therefore, they want to destroy the very idea of Ukrainian identity because they find that their own identity is problematic. So for Ukraine, it's an existential war. Russia wants to destroy us. We don't want Ukraine to be destroyed. For Europe, it's an existential war. And I think that in Europe, very little people understand it. Because basically Russia wants to take a revenge for its loss in the Cold War. It believes that it lost the Cold War. And as Putin said, it was a great geopolitical catastrophe for the whole world. And therefore, their idea is to rebuild a world of the Cold War where there will be a few hegemons. And in their vision of the world, there will be three hegemons. It will be Russia, United States, and China. And in this vision of the world, Europe doesn't exist as a pole, as a geopolitical pole. Therefore, they want to undo everything that turned the European Union into kind of a geopolitical player, which means the whole enlargement of the 1990s and 2000s, especially 2000s, of course, if we're talking about EU. So they want to divide Europe again. They want to come back to the times of the Warsaw Pact. They want to a European continent divided again between, let's say, Americans and Russians. And therefore, they don't want to European Union to exist as a separate player. Therefore, they play so much with specific nation states inside the European Union, such as Hungary, to divide the European Union from within. And therefore, I'm saying that Europe will survive the 21st century only if it will be more or less united, only if it will be able to respond to the global challenges with at least more or less single voice. And such challenges as COVID and then Russian invasion and then your American invasion to Iran of Iran and other cataclysms that are likely to appear in the near future, there will be a testing challenges for Europe, whether it's able to be an integrated and united and very strong player in the geopolitical settings of the 21st century, or it will not be able to do so.
So Russian aggression is a threat for Europe, not only for Ukraine. Ukraine is fighting, and nobody was expected like for such a resistance of Ukrainians, but it lasts 50 years, and we are talking now about security in the whole Europe. What is the role of Ukraine in European and particularly in German security?
Right now, we can say that Europe does not exist as a geopolitical actor because it is left alone in security dimension without the Americans. Americans show more and more that they are not going to defend Europe if, for example, Russia attacks the Baltic states. Therefore, Europe depends very much on Ukraine and how long Ukraine will be able to resist against Russian invasion. And even if Russia invades the Baltic states, the member states of the European Union or some other countries, Europe will be relying a lot upon Ukrainian technology, upon Ukrainian expertise, maybe even upon Ukrainian soldiers. So therefore, my point is that it's not only an existential war for Ukraine, it's also an existential war for Europe. Europe will either become stronger out of this conflict, out of these wars, and its strength partly comes from its own potential, but also partly comes from Ukraine and Ukraine's security capacities. Or it will disappear. It will be divided between the new empires, the new hegemons of the 21st century. It will be colonized by these new hegemons. And I said at the conference that I see the current behavior of the Hungarian government as a sign of Europe being colonized by the Russians. The same process can be with other countries as well.
Yeah, we talked with Volodymyr before the Hungarian elections, but now we have other situation. We hope it will change and the new government will be loyal to European values. The next question is about our strengths and weaknesses. Obviously, we have an enemy which is invading European territories. I mean, Ukrainian. We have an aggressor, obviously. We have no choice just to defend ourselves. And I would like to ask about strengths and weaknesses. What our strengths, Ukrainian, European, yeah? And what are the strengths of Russia? What are Europeans relying on and what are Russians relying on?
So Europe is stronger in terms of peace. Europe has a better economy. Europe has much bigger population, about 500 million people. Europe has a much smarter and more educated population than Russia. But Russia is stronger in war. Russia is stronger in violence. Russia knows how violence works. Russia knows how to organize violence so that it kind of helps the power. And Russia's ambition in the past decades, I think, was to gradually move the world into the world of the wars, in which Russians are stronger. They are more prepared because they have been preparing for it for a longer time, because they turned every domain of human existence into a kind of a weaponized domain. It weaponized energy, it weaponized education, it weaponized information. Mm-hmm. While Europeans are considering all these fields still as a fields of peace, and therefore it took a very long time for them to understand what is information war. It took a very long time for them to understand what is energy war, trade war, etc., because they considered all these spheres as the different faces of peace. While for Russians, they are the different faces of the war and of, certain violence or certain punishments and control and everything else. So if we imagine a direct conflict between Russia and the EU, the EU will lose. The EU will lose in information war, in cyber war, in energy war, and, of course, in the kinetic war. Thanks to Ukraine, the prospects, for example, of the energy war are not that present because Europe started to refuse from the Russian energy resources. They can come back, of course, after this crisis in the Middle East, but still Europe is less dependent on Russia and therefore less Russia can manipulate it with less success. But in other domains, there is still a lot of naivete in Europe with regard to what Russia actually can do and what the war can do. Therefore, I think that Europe should not only wake up, Europe should have been waking up for a long time. Europe should start acting. And this kind of feeling of powerlessness is present, unfortunately, in many European countries. That doesn't mean that they do not do anything. They help a lot Ukraine. They help Ukrainian economy. If without European help, Ukrainian economy would have collapsed. So Europe is a very, very important factor for Ukrainian resistance and resilience. We should acknowledge that. But I think its logic in Europe should change, its mental logic should change from the thinking, oh, we need to help Ukraine to resist, to thinking, we are in danger, we are being attacked, we are at war with the enemy, be it Russia or maybe tomorrow it will be some other enemy, and we should learn how to defend ourselves in different domains, in the domains of energy, in the domains of trade, in the domains of information technologies, in the domain of kinetic war, in the domain of cyber war, etc.
Speaking about global war that seems to be escalating and extending every day in different parts of the world, who is this existential war really between, like, not only Russia and Ukraine, but in global contexts? Is it a confrontation between East and West, between different civilizations, or is it something more complex?
No, it's not a war between Western civilization and not Western civilization, because Western civilization is itself being fragmented. We don't know whether Americans consider themselves as part of the Western civilization or not. I care about Europe. I care about Europe as a continent of human rights, as a continent of democracy, as a continent of discussion, dialogue, but which needs to learn how to protect itself. And Ukraine shows as a good example. Ukraine is a democracy able to protect itself against the new empire of the Russian Federation. And unfortunately, these conflicts will only increase in the 21st century. The middle powers are more and more aggressed by the bigger powers. There is no big power in Europe anymore. Europe is a federation or republic of smaller powers. So either it learns how to protect itself collectively, or it will be disappear. It will be just divided by the big powers.
We hope that we will not allow this, and it's time to talk about some kind of prediction of futures. What will happen in the future? Let's listen to music and then come back to speak about future and what to do, basically, how to protect security in Europe. We'll listen to Daft Punk and Offline. away with this music. So I remind you guys that today we are talking about how not to take for granted our security. And our guest is Volodymyr Yermolenko, Ukrainian philosopher, writer, and political expert. He is representing Ukraine in different platforms across Europe. Volodymyr, you participate in different conferences, events, discussions. What did you notice? What Europeans don't understand about the war in Ukraine, still don't understand, like the fifth year of this brutal war? What Europeans don't understand about the war in Ukraine and about threats to the peace in the Euro Union?
Thanks to your partners, in particular European partners, Ukraine can rely on a big financial basis, and it's a big thing. It's about 40% of the Ukrainian budget. So we basically spend a lot on military needs, but if we imagine that at some point Europeans do not provide funds for Ukraine, Ukrainian economy will collapse and inflation will skyrocket, and there will be lots of problems with payments and jobs and everything. And Ukraine will need to take the funds it spends on war technology and bring it to the social needs, etc. So we cannot say that Europe is just observing. We can say that Europe helps Ukraine a lot. But what Europe is not aware still is that it is its war. It is a party of this war, because Russia believes that Europe is Russian enemy, and it wants to divide Europe, and it wants to colonize Europe. And it doesn't colonizing Europe only by military force. It's colonizing it through cognitive wars, through the election results. Look at what's happening in Eastern Germany. Look at what's happening in Slovakia. Look at what's happening in Czech Republic, in Serbia, in Romania, etc. This is the Russian major ambition. They want to reconquer Eastern and Central Europe up until Germany, and they are very serious about that, not by military technology, but by information technology, information wars, cognitive wars, propaganda, and everything else. And they are quite successful in this. So in this sense, Europe should, I think, realize more, and especially European youth, the young people, which are totally looking in the wrong direction, as far as I know and as far as I understand. They should be waking up. They should understand better that their welfare, their freedom of speech, their freedom of behavior depends on whether Russia will lose this war, whether it will not be able to fund radical parties across Europe, whether it will not be ready to, you know, to support radicals far right or far left across Europe, etc.
It's obviously that it's really question of existential of Europe, and it's not the time to play such a dangerous games like be tolerant to Russian propaganda, for example. Weird, like when some politicians or media even don't name the aggressor an aggressor, like they are tolerating lie, saying that it's a tolerance, some kind of freedom of speech, like how to not confuse freedom of speech, freedom of thinking with a lie. And basically, what should Europe do to defend their security?
I think a lot of debates in Europe are wrong. The first wrong direction is whether Europe should send troops to Ukraine right now. It's such a hot debate in Europe, and it has such a little value in the current circumstances, because if Europe sends 10,000 troops to Ukraine, it will change nothing on the battlefield. In Ukraine versus Russia right now, it's 1 million against 1 million on the both sides, and this is and highly trained and prepared and committed people, right? So we should not overestimate this troop sending. What Europe can do, Europe can help a lot technologically. because this is a technological war. Technologies are evolving and changing all the time. Europe has a big intellectual potential, R&D potential, research and development potential. It has resources, it has money, it has universities, it has tech labs, and it is lagging behind in all this technology. It is losing the technological war to Americans and to the Chinese. It should consider this war, maybe it sounds cynically, but as an opportunity for itself, for Europeans itself, to catch up with Americans, with Chinese, and with the Ukrainians in terms of the future technologies. And I think there is a very clear interest for Europeans right now, because we are talking about drones technology in the war, but drones will be an absolute game changer during the peacetime. They will completely change logistics. They will completely change transportation. They will completely change, you know, postal services. They will completely change observance, surveillance, security surveillance. They will completely change agriculture because the drones will be directing, you know, many, many things. And I think Europeans have to think about this technological race that that is being opened up with this war and say two things. First, technologies can help win the war. Technology can save much more of human lives, because this is what Ukrainians are striving for. Ukrainians understand that Russians have more people, and therefore we need to learn how to save more people than Russians. Russians are not caring about their lives. Ukrainians are caring about their lives. And the third thing is that Europeans should look at this war as a technological opportunity.
How you see a common policy for security of Ukraine and Europe? Now the Ukraine is fighting, Ukraine literally bleeding, literally struggling for their existence, and Europe is helping, but how to build common security?
Now, the debate in Europe is about top-down approach, whether European Union should be building its common security policy or not. Well, this is a good debate, but it's debate for the next decades, because reforms in the European Union will take a lot of time. If you want to build a common security policy inside the EU, you should amend the treaties, and it's a story for the next decade. The question is, what should we do now? What Europeans should be do now? And here the answer is very simple. Go to Ukraine to learn, facilitate the business-to-business contacts between Ukrainian enterprises and European enterprises so that there are more joint ventures, including in security technology, defense technology. Find more and better and more easily accessible capital for the Ukrainian military production. Change your own strategies in military production, because right now Europeans think that if they just invest more money and produce more tanks, they will be more secured. The answer is no, because technologies have changed, and probably you should better produce 10 or 100 drones instead of one tank right now. All these things can be done. They should be done bottom up and not top down. Europeans should not wait until people in Brussels agree to set up a new security union or whatever else. Yeah, and this can be done on the level of particular and specific member states. And this is what is happening right now. We probably are experiencing a new security Europe being born. But this security Europe, its borders do not correspond with the borders of the EU, because they include Nordic countries, including countries which are not part of the EU, like Norway or UK. They include Ukraine, not EU country. They can probably in the near future include Turkey, which is a not EU member state. They can probably include the countries in the Middle East. So this is a kind of a coalition of middle powers who understand that they need to cooperate in order to oppose to the big powers of the 21st century. such as Russia or China or United States?
So it's obviously that we need new security unions based on real war experience, on real experience of defense, which Ukraine demonstrate all this time, because organizations like NATO, they showed their incapability not only to prevent, but even protect the peace. They obviously failed, and Ukraine now is a main player in safety pictures, like in European continent. It's obviously, and talking about the nearest future, maybe Ukraine will choose whom to build such security unions with. See it, but first, Lou Reed, Perfect Day.
Just a perfect day. Drink sangria in the park. And then later, when it gets dark, we go home. Just a perfect day. Feed animals in the zoo. Then later, a movie too, and then home. Oh, it's such a perfect day. I'm glad I spent it with you. Oh, such a perfect day. You just keep me hanging on. You just keep. Just a perfect day. Problems all left alone. Weekenders on our own. It's such fun. Just a perfect day. You made me forget myself. I thought I was someone else, someone good. Oh, it's such a perfect day. I'm glad I spent it with you. Oh, such a perfect day. You just keep me hanging on. You just keep. Just what you sow. You're going to reap just what you sow.
So guys, I remind you, don't take it for granted. Today we are talking about common policy of security in Europe and Ukraine. My guest is Volodymyr Yermolenko, philosopher, political expert, writer, the president of P5 European Club of Ukraine. And we are talking about existential war, this war between Ukraine and Russia. It's existential war not only for Ukraine, but for the whole European civilization, for the whole European continent. And about predictability and future, actually. How much can we actually predict today, given that the world failed to foresee or prepare for both, like pandemic of COVID-19, the world couldn't predict the war against Ukraine, and there is a question about it. How relevant are any forecasts at all? Can we truly predict anything? For 5 years already, we have heard about a so-called three-day operation of Russia against Ukraine. I remind you guys that Russia was going to invade Ukraine in 3 days, but then something went wrong for them, yeah? I think it was Ukrainian resistance. They weren't expected for such a resistance. We can assume that any predictions doesn't work anymore. Any predictions, forecasts lost their power. Like, how randomly or chaotic are the processes shaping the world right now? But despite of all of this, could you outlook for the future? What do you see there?
I never give any prognosis. You're right that the future is unpredictable. We can be preparing for something based upon the tendencies that we see, and then a complete opposite will happen. So, for example, during the COVID, everybody was thinking that the old world is over and we are living in a completely different world right now, where the bodies will communicate not that intensively, and we will communicate more and more online, distantly. Well, partially this happens, partially it doesn't happen. Partially we jumped into a new digital world. Partially we returned to status quo ante, where we have been before. Thinking about the future, I think that, well, the tendencies unfortunately show that the global institutions are crumbling. They are not sustainable anymore. This is what Ukrainians were saying since Russia invaded Georgia in 2008, that it's an attack on the global security, on the international law. Basically, people say that annexation of Crimea was the first annexation since, and the change of borders since the end of the Second World War. But if we look seriously on this and do not think in terms of this Russian games of terminology, already the attack on Georgia was this case in 2008. And therefore, what Georgians and Ukrainians were saying to everybody else, that if one power will do it, then any other power will do it too. And this is what started to be happening. The Trump administration is trying to imitate Putin, and then we will maybe see Chinese attacks on Taiwan or other countries in the near future. Then we might see other conflicts all around the world, because every war produces new technologies, produces new military ideas. They spread around the world. Some powers want to buy this new technology to have advantage over their potential neighbor or enemies or neighbors, and they use it, and etc. And it becomes a spillover effect. So unfortunately, we will probably be living in the world much more insecure, where we will have the tendencies of the new imperialism, the big powers that are saying we no longer observe your rules, international collective rules, we rather do what we want. We see that from Russia and Trump's America. We might be seeing it from China very soon. And in this world, the only chance of the middle powers is to combine efforts. It's kind of a federation of republics against the big empires. There are a lot of negative sides of Europe. There are a lot of problems in Europe. But there is a one positive side. European countries have been living together for quite a long time, and therefore they have this tradition of, you know, dialogue and compromises. These compromises are not very good sometimes, but there is this culture of compromise. Nobody else in the world achieved that. There were different attempts to do that. Russia attempted to create its own union in other parts of the world. They all failed. Europeans are the only one who succeeded so far. Maybe they will fail too. We don't know. But so far they have this, know-how how to keep lots of different countries together and how to talk and how to reach a compromise. Ukraine wants to join this club. Ukraine is not just a receiver of European aid. It's a provider of security for Europe. Ukraine has to learn a lot from the EU, from Europe, but EU should learn a lot from Ukraine too. And if we succeed in this mutual learning and mutual action, we will survive. Both of us, Europe and Ukraine, will survive. If we don't actually succeed in this, both of us will fail. If Europe fails, then there is a high risk that Ukraine will fail too. If Ukraine fails, there is a high risk that your European Union will fail too, because it's not capable of protecting itself against Russia, and American security umbrella is gone, at least for the next years and maybe for the next decades. So I don't know what will happen next. What I know is that we should keep this balance between a capacity of talking to each other and capacity to defend our common space. This is what I call the balance between agora and agon. And I hope we will succeed together.
Yeah, of course, I hope as well. We have no other choice. I hope too that we will succeed and to save our peace and our world. And what we can conclude probably that only those who resist and defend themselves will survive. Yeah, so we have to fight for our peace. And other conclusion that unpunished crimes and violence and aggression tend to be repeated on and in even larger scale. This is the rule number two, yes. Therefore, some conclusions and predictions can still be made, like we have to fight for ourselves and we have to punish an aggressor. Okay, and we'll see what will happen, because this war is really existential for our existence. Like, it's a matter of our existence of our values, of the things which matters for us, as for civilization, as for human beings. So we are keeping fighting. The key is to understand what you are fighting for, really, and which values you are defending. I think it's about values. Don't take it for granted, guys. Peace, important things in your life. Don't take it for granted, guys. And now beautiful music. King Crimson, I Talk to the Wind.
Set the straight man to the late man. Where have you been? I've been here and I've been there and I've been in between. I talk to the wind. My words are all carried away. I talk to the wind. I'm on the outside.
just upset my mind. Can't instruct me or conduct me, just use up my time. I talk to the wind, my words are all carried away. I talk to the wind.
How the wind of my empty belly hitchhiked away.
I've been there and I've been.